So, okay, this is Ron Stevens with Python 411, Computer Programming for Everybody, and I'm very, very pleased to have Mr. Mike Mueller from Leipzig, Germany, and I'm sure I mispronounced that. But hi, Mike, and thanks for coming to be interviewed. So, Mike, you run something called the Python Academy in Leipzig, and okay, correct me on the pronunciation of Leipzig, okay? It's, how do you say Leipzig?
Leipzig.
Leipzig. Yeah. Okay. And I think that the overall theme of this interview is going to be marketing of Python in Germany and how popular is Python in Germany. So let me start by asking, how did you first come into contact with Python and how long ago was that?
It was pretty much 7 years ago, I think. It must be in April.
Mm-hmm.
7 years ago. I started looking around for programming languages. This time I just began my work for my PhD, and I needed some programming language to couple a bunch of models I had there. Those are models written in Fortran and C, and I looked for something to couple them, and I tried like Java and other things. And then I came across Python, and I asked the email list, and somebody was very called me and talked me into Python half an hour. So I tried Python, and I haven't regretted so far. Mm-hmm. So I use Python to do quite a bit of scientific work. So I couple existing models that are, I counted up, it's about 50 man years of work, programming work, inside those models, about roughly. And I just used it, reused it, and put it together on a new system. So that's how I started Python.
Wow, that's incredible. And so before Python, you were using Java and C++?
No, I tried a little bit, all of them. Actually, before I used only Fortran to do some scientific work, but I realized Fortran is not the best programming language to do other things besides some calculations. Well, calculations fine, but other things you don't want to use Fortran for this one. So I looked at other alternatives, and I learned a little bit Java, and then even learned a little bit Visual Basic and looked at this and tried different things. And of course, I didn't know much about programming this time, but I had a big need to do it.
Right.
So I eventually ended up with Python, and I think it was a good choice.
Can you tell us a little about your scientific work and what's involved in that?
Yeah, it's mainly about modeling. No, actually, I come from the groundwater area. The groundwater, all the groundwater is in the subsurface, and it's flowing, and very often also it's carrying substances. And this one, of course, we use the groundwater for drinking purposes in Germany a lot, and they have it clean, so I have to know where it comes from and if it's polluted and things like this. And this is a big model you can get quite a bit inside and see how it moves. And I'm mainly involved in these mining areas. Here there are in the middle of Germany and eastern Germany, they have big mining areas.
Yes.
And they're abandoned now. And they have things called open pits, and they're filling with water. And this water becomes acidic because of all the chemistry going on. And now the groundwater is flowing into the lake and becomes surface water. And so I start coupling models. Groundwater model that's describing what's happening in the groundwater. The lake model describes what's happening in the lake. In the lake, you have several processes, like this water is moving around in the lake, that's the flow, then it's transported substances, and the substances themselves get involved in reactions, chemical reactions, although biology is going there. So a lot of difficult processes. And usually, we have models for most of the processes, but they're not connected. So you need to interconnect those models.
Is it a lot of mathematics involved?
A lot of mathematics, but the mathematics is inside the model, so I haven't touched the mathematics too much because they are pretty much clear for each field.
Yes.
But the main thing is they don't talk to each other.
Right.
Those models are there, but they don't talk to each other, and they are from different experts. So they have maybe four or five different fields, and they all have their own terminology, their own things. So it's kind of difficult to talk to those people. Sometimes you speak with somebody for half an hour, and then after half an hour, it's like this. So you come up with something. You talk and talk and talk, but you don't communicate.
Right.
Because this guy is using different terminology. It's kind of very difficult if you do this interdisciplinary stuff.
And a lot of that is written in Fortran historically.
It's written in Fortran. Those things are sometimes 30 years and older.
Wow.
So they have several kinds of incarnation, so to speak. They have models started there, and then somebody continued and changed a little bit, but stays Fortran and sometimes has some very old, unfashionable things inside those. But you have to work with, because you cannot redo 50 years of programming just like this.
It's yes. But now I noticed on your website, you're using something called F2Py.
F2Py,
right.
It's something written by Taru Patterson. I think he's from Lithuania. This guy, And he wrote a very nice tool. You can just wrap your Fortran code into Python to make a nice Python object out of it. And it's very, very nice. You can communicate with the Fortran code. You can push arrays back and forth and do things like this. Very nice. So
yeah,
I use it now very, very much, and that makes it much easier. Because the first thing I wrap by hand, and it's a lot of work. I wrap Fortran with C, and then C with Python, so
wow.
It's quite a bit of work. Yeah.
So you've been very happy with the way Python has worked out in this field for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah. I think so far the best programming language I'm working with. Although I tried, and I'm really happy with it. I think a lot of things I can do with Python I wouldn't be able to do, at least in this amount of time I had
right.
with other language. Because you can do a lot of things like I'm using Python on my Linux cluster. So this is even a small
uh-huh.
cluster, but I need it because of my calculation times are rather long.
Right.
So I used Pyro, which is Python.
Oh yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just put it on the cluster and just calculate in the cluster, and it just took me just 2 weeks to make it parallel. Just compared to if I use something like MPI and do things, I think it's more difficult because it takes much longer to understand how things work. So
that's fascinating.
If it's Python. It's Python. You know, it just
yep.
a list in a dictionary and just do it. And
now, do you find that it's common for people these days to use Python in your field of science in Europe or not?
Not so much. I meet some guys from time to time. I met one guy from a Dutch guy from Netherlands. He's using Python to do some analytical modeling, which is a different kind of over groundwater modeling. He came up with some Python things. Otherwise, I haven't so many people using Python.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a few people around me now using Python. But
well, you're the start of something, and you know, at the PyCon, I was fortunate to be able to go to my first PyCon this year, and there was a professor from MIT who in robotics, and he mentioned that Python, he has sort of pioneered Python there, and it's becoming very common there. So he's very enthusiastic, optimistic about the future of Python in science. But I realize
yeah.
it has to happen step by step. You know.
Yeah. I know there are a lot of different people. I think 2 years or 3 years ago, I was at the SIAM, which is Science Industrial Applied Mathematics,
mm-hmm.
a big conference in Utah, and
yeah.
there was a mini symposium about Python and science. So they had people from climate modeling and
mm-hmm.
people calculating fractals. So they're meeting there. There are a few people doing Python, but it's not mainstream yet. In this field.
Right.
So,
what about in Europe and in Germany, beyond just the sciences? Is Python becoming more? I noticed that you have a user group on your website,
yes.
for instance. Has that been in existence for very long?
No, we just started this year. So,
yeah.
And I'm aware that we are the only active user group right now. There used to be one in Berlin, but it seems like they're not active anymore. At least I haven't heard anything about it.
Right.
And those, I don't know why it is, but because in the States you have a lot of user groups. Because in Germany, there are quite a few Germans using Python. There are some SOAP user groups here. They're pretty active, I see, because SOAP seems like it has a big standing here.
I've noticed at PyCon that SOAP had so many people from Europe who were into SOAP. So it is, SOAP is more popular in Europe
yeah.
than in the U.S., I think.
Yeah, yeah. There's a SOAP user group here in Saxony, which is the state I'm in.
Right.
And I contact those people, and they're interested. Maybe we can even meet, because they also deal with Python, like interesting
right.
things, what I'm doing there. So there might be some contact. But
well, I've thought about starting a user group in my area in Connecticut, near New York City, but it's I think we each have to – I think it's wonderful that you started one, and it looks like it's very active. And you have a meeting this Tuesday from what
I have a meeting this Tuesday, yeah. I'm going to give a presentation about REST2 BAM.
Yes.
Because I'm using this to set up my website, and now I just – give a presentation how to do this, because I think it's a very, very nice system to do this.
Yeah, well, Michael Ford, who I interviewed recently, will be happy to hear that you're going to give a talk on REST to Web.
Yeah, I'm going to put the talk in the net, so you can.
Oh, wonderful!
Even though it will be in German, though, but.
Well, but that's
if I have
good.
Time, I might be. But it has a very nice manual, though. But I just make it more shorter, a little bit.
Right.
More, not so.
Well, I appreciate the parts of your website that are translatable into English, where you have it an option, but. But I think it's even more valuable that you have something like those things in German to help
yeah.
the German people
especially
learn
those
Python.
Beginners. Some person
sure.
learning English is not so, like if you go to Scandinavia, most of the people speak English like nearly a native language. But
right.
in Germany, English is still not so common for
yes,
some
and,
people.
And
they read, scientists usually read English. Yeah,
sure.
It's supposed to be,
but it's not their first language. And
no, it's not their first
so
language.
I think having it in the more common language for people – you know, it's hard enough to learn programming without struggling with a language barrier.
Yeah.
So I think it's wonderful that you're doing this in German. And the other thing that, and this brings us to one of the major topics, you have founded something called the Python Academy,
yeah.
a programming school in Leipzig. Did I say it close to correctly that time? Leipzig?
Yeah. It's pretty close. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, tell us about the Python Academy. This is fascinating.
Yeah. I had this idea quite a while ago, and then now I moved here to Leipzig, and I have a little facility. So I have a room. So I have a room with a few computers, and I said, okay, let's do it now. And I founded Python Academy, which is not so difficult. I do Python Academy and do my website, and now start contacting people talking about it, and have quite a few people interested in the courses, mostly from the scientific field, because I know those
right.
people, and they need to do Python.
Well, I hope I can help you publicize it a little bit. If people in Germany, I don't know how many people in Germany listen to this podcast series, but I see that you have two courses for offering.
Yeah.
One is for beginners. And the other is for programmers.
Yeah, I have some called non-programmers and the programmers course.
Right.
The non-programmers are people that never programmed before. They just know a little bit Windows or whatever and do a little bit office working. And now they need the program. I have those people. Like, very often they come with a content management area, like SOAP people. Now they use SOAP or Plone or something.
Mm-hmm.
But now they have to do something. They have to connect this one to their own database or do something.
Right.
And for this one, they need Python. And those people are a little bit scared of programming, or is programming so difficult, shifting bits around or things like this. So I have a course for those people that never programmed before, so they can get a very gentle introduction to what
yep.
programming is all like. And then I have a course for programmers, so people that did some programming, even though it might be a little bit dated a few years ago, but they know what a variable is and know what loops are and things like
right.
this. So they can start much faster. And then usually I start with just jump into object-oriented programming right away. And just because people are afraid of this big word, they don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard that people program for 20 years, but object-oriented programming, they don't want it.
I think it's a common thing. When I was, I'm quite a bit older than you probably, and when I was in college maybe 30 years ago, there really wasn't any object-oriented programming that I was aware of. So yeah, it was a big thing for me to learn object-oriented programming. And once I learned it in Python, it became second nature and easier than
yeah,
almost.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I want to get across. I want to say this object is easier because you are closer to your problem than
right.
me, but not so close to the computer, so it should be easy for you to think in your you are expert
to think it through and also to reuse the code.
Yeah.
You know, it's easier that way. And looking, you do have the sort of the course content and outline translated into English
yeah.
also, and
yeah.
and it looks very thorough and very comprehensive and well thought out. So I think that people will benefit from this very, very much. Now, is this a relatively new endeavor?
Yeah, this, I gave those courses at the other connection that I have. I gave this course
mm-hmm.
and had a pretty well feedback, I would say. Those people, they learned Python, I think, in this course. And though I just use it now and just remodel a little bit, I thought I have to have maybe for my examples, things like this. So, but I think but this course for programmers, I used already, so I know how it works. For the non-programmers, I have to be more gentle, I have to say. So
right.
This is a course, I start with a big example first, and this one has all the things in, and then I go into the details, so people can see the whole picture and then can see the details. So
right.
They don't have to see all the little things and come together, but the other way around, and I think it works. For programmers, it works. So
mm-hmm.
And it's pretty okay.
Well, I hope you have very good attendance and success with the Python Academy, and it looks like an idea maybe others could follow upon in other countries, who knows,
yeah.
In other languages. And I hope you build your website. You know, one thing you could do is try to be a portal for German language
yeah.
Python tools and tutorials and things like that. So I think that would be very valuable also.
Yeah.
What do you think about the future of Python in general? With so much activity going on, Python 2.5 coming out, Python 3000 being worked on, and PyPy is a very big thing in Europe these days also. Are you familiar with PyPy?
I'm familiar with PyPy, yeah.
Yeah, it's, do you think that Python has a will be more common 5 years from now or less common?
I hope it will be more.
Okay.
As long as it stays as small as it is now in terms of language features, you don't want to have too many features.
Well, there is a lot of going on new features.
I think if the features are like they are nice to have, but you don't need them necessarily
mm-hmm.
to do something. Like, they are more optional in the future for exports, so to speak. Some
right.
people like a lot of features, but if you put all the features in, then the language getting big and this
makes it harder to learn.
Getting
and
towards C++ or something like
yeah,
that.
We don't want to go that direction, though.
Yeah. No, but you ever have something that's simple and you can do things, and then all those like this meta programming is done by experts, and you don't have to come into direct contact. This is, you can still do all your work. That's okay. But you have too many things you have to keep in mind, so it's getting too difficult for beginners. Because also this programming for everybody thing, I like this very much. So I think it has a big merit in the future that people need to use the computer more actively, and this would be through programming.
Right.
You know, this passive use you have now, you have applications doing things, but as soon as you have to do something that's not thought through yet, then you're stuck. You cannot go further. Yeah.
Well, that's what your courses are going to help them on.
Yeah.
Now, we should give the URL. Your website is www.python-academy.com.
.com, and for the German version is .de.
.de. So,
yeah, but both of them, they have this little small flag there in the corner
uh-huh.
for the other language, so you can switch languages. Just click on the flag, and then you will be on the German
right.
or English side, vice versa.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what else would you like to say?
I would like to, because the Python Academy is doing courses, but we're all doing some other things, like I'm planning to do a workshop in September
oh.
here in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
I contacted the university already, so I have a room to do a workshop. And it will be the date will be the 8th of September.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called like Python in German-speaking countries. So everything Python in Germany, or Germany plus Austria and Switzerland, other people speak German. And I have a few people interested in already. So the call for papers will be out probably next week or so. And I'll make a workshop, which is like kind of a small-scale conference.
Right.
People come here, talk about Python, and we meet, and maybe
yeah.
we have a meeting in the evening, talk about it. And I would like to draw people from all over Germany. Really.
Sure. Well, I encourage you to publicize it, and I'll try to help just a little bit and publicize it as much
yeah.
as I can. And
I want just because I organized the workshop already, so I know how to do it. There's a lot of work, so but you have to get through. So I would like to have a publication of this. It's a proceeding. So all the talks, you have to write up a small paper, and then there will be a publication, and it will be out there, and it will be available in bookstores. So
right.
Or at least through Amazon.
Are there many books in the German language about Python?
There are quite a few books in German, I have to say. I don't know the right number now, but let's say 20 or even more.
Are they mostly the same ones that I would be familiar with in English, or are there any written in German that I might not be familiar with?
Yeah, there are different ones.
Oh, okay.
One is from Gregor Lingus. It's called Python for Kids,
mm-hmm.
or Python für Kids
mm.
in German. It's really written for children, so it's very very simple, and he starts kind of topographic things. I haven't read the book yet, but
yeah,
I look through. And he's very simple, and he starts very simple concepts for kids, a programming book. That's something I haven't heard, that's the English version out there. And the other books are mostly introductory books.
Mm-hmm.
There are different publishers have different series.
Well, that's good.
Like Start Learning and this or 24
mm-hmm.
Hours. There are some translations from English, but nowadays there are more books written in German.
Yeah, I find that interesting because I'm so interested in books and the publishing industry. You know, you should be able. I was just thinking out loud. You really, if you can get the word out in the SOAP community, you should be able to attract a lot of people to these courses and training sessions. I think.
Yeah. Also, I would like to contact people that don't know about Python yet. So.
Sure, of course.
So,
yeah.
Like I contacted the Chamber of Commerce here, the local ones. So they might have some things I can give them some presentations about Python, what it's all about, and all the things
mm-hmm.
because people don't know yet. And I want to go this route or go to people that are inclined to use a programming language somehow,
yeah.
but they don't know which one or what. And those give them some hints. Maybe this will
right.
help to publicize Python, although maybe somebody who comes to my course is too long programming.
Well, I wish you the best, and I hope that someday I can meet you. You never know how things will develop in the future. It would be nice
yeah.
to.
To maybe
meet
I
you.
Can make it to a PyCon or so.
Well, that'd be wonderful, yeah.
Well, if you come to EuroPython, you might
yeah, maybe. You never know. I could take a vacation and come to EuroPython. So, yeah, and I'd love to see your beautiful city of Leipzig also. Okay, any last-minute thoughts you want to leave the audience with?
Last-minute thought? No, I think it's Yeah. I would like, because I had people sending me emails, I would like to come to the user group, the Python user group here in Leipzig, but they're too far away. So they would very much like to come. And though actually this was the initial thing to start this workshop in September, because then it would be worthwhile for people to come also to travel a longer distance. And so I would invite all the people in Germany who are interested in Python to come to this workshop in September. The word will be out soon about the details.
Okay. And, you'll put all that on your website.
I will put it on the website and send it out on the Python announce list and things like this. And
right.
It will be out there. And also then the engineers are very often more or less programmers by accident.
Right.
Yeah.
And Python's perfect for those people, I think.
Yeah.
And that's me, actually. I'm sort of an engineer. Yeah.
Yeah. And then now Python helps a little bit just to jump or to make one step forward from just programming to software engineering or software development, or what you want to call it, a little bit organized, because now I use Python, I use Subversion to this version control thing, all the things. And a lot of programmers, they never heard about those tools.
That's one of the biggest problems that I had in the early days, was I would lose my software, get confused between the versions, my changes.
All those kind of things are like all this, what sometimes those software engineers or engineering things in Java, they overdo it a little bit. They have too many tools, too many procedures, too many steps, and whatever. So you're just doing procedure and programming is a bit short, but little bits of those organization would be good. And
maybe do you use any IDE in particular?
On Windows, I just use this Python Win. It's okay because it's there with Windows, so I install it anyway to have all those Windows extensions, because I talk to Excel and things like this, so I need it. And there's so many nice ones around. I thought I would try one, but I haven't time yet to, because you have to like the Stanis.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Stanis, yeah. I haven't tried it yet, but I'm interested in it also.
That might be an interesting one. Now they're teaming up a little bit to
get
serious about it. And some of them I would like to try, but I'm using this one, and I'm pretty familiar with this and comfortable.
Right.
It's a kind of a threshold to jump to.
I understand completely. What about GUIs? If you'd use GUIs, do you have a favorite toolkit? Or?
Actually, I haven't done GUIs yet, but I have to, and I will. And actually, I'm going to use WXPython.
Yes.
And also maybe this Wax from Hansola.
Yes. I've been using that because my blog software, FireDrop, which was by him, uses Wax. So WXPython has pretty much become my favorite too.
This Tuesday should be about WXPython. But the guy who's giving this talk, he's on business trip, so he cannot do it. probably maybe in May or even later he will do it.
Well, Hans is one of my favorite Pythonistas, so both he and Michael Ford will be very happy with this, because I think I want to make sure they hear about that you're using their tools.
No, I'm going to use it because I thought this is my scientific problem. Now everything's still command line, and all those tools have their own kind of GUI or not GUI.
Yeah.
I have to put it together somehow and have to make something new.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going Wax, but Wax is not totally complete. I think it doesn't cover everything.
No, that's true. That's absolutely true. And it's hard. It's hard, when you're like Hans is full time employed, and it's hard to keep. To finish these open source projects, one very technical, I guess a technical question, but I'm just curious personally, on the F2Py tool that you use and getting the, does it actually take a Fortran code and translate it into Python code automatically?
No, it doesn't do anything like this, because that's not what you want, because you want the speed of Fortran.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So what you have some Fortran subroutines. And you put them there, and first you can make a signature file. They have different ways. For everything automatic, I do it in two steps. First, you do a signature file, and it's scanning this Fortran modules, you tell it, and then it makes a signature file. It's kind of very similar to Fortran 90 notation, and recognize which kind of variables and types are in there, and what kind of interfaces you want, how you want to couple it. When you write your file, you can read it, and if you want to, you can edit by hand. If you say, I want to do something else, the thing has to guess what you want to do, So, and then... Then you, the next step, you just compile it, and you compile everything into a Fortran. And this Fortran is, because you need to feed a Fortran compiler and a C compiler, and this one is compiled in a PYD, in a Python data on the Windows, on a SO on the Linux. And then you just import this module, and I can use it just, it feels like just normal Python. And what I do, I use this so-called, there's a construct in Fortran 90, it's called module, where I can share data between subroutines. And you can also share data between Python and Fortran. So it's very nice. You can put, like, you have the module dot something, and then you have the variable name, and you can use the variable that's used in Fortran directly in Python, and can set the value and can read the value.
So you can still run the fast Fortran code that already exists, but interface with it with Python code.
Exactly. That's what F2 Py is doing there.
Very interesting.
It works pretty well. So I have these old programs, and then, because I don't want to do input-output in Fortran, it's like not very nice.
Okay. Yeah?
So I do this in Python, and that's not very... There's performance, I think, if you do this in Python, behind it in C anyway. So the performance difference not so big. Only the calculations, like solving these big systems of equations, that takes a long time. This has to be in Fortran. And it's there already. I don't need a rewrite. This should be in Fortran, but everything else I would like to do in Python. Yeah, and this one, this solving of equations takes 95 or 98% of the time. And the 2% of time I can do in Python. If it takes 10 times as long, it's still not too bad. So it's okay.
Right.
Yeah, so that's one of those. Of course, the solving of equations is a rather small part of these big Fortran programs.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of things is just input-output. They spend a lot of time going to loops and do input-output because it's rather difficult in Fortran. And because you don't have any dictionaries, nothing, only thing have arrays. And
It's
a different way of thinking. So
right.
It makes things more difficult. So.
Okay, very interesting. Anything else that comes to mind?
I would like thank you very much that you called me in the interview. It was very nice talking to you. I like it very much.
Okay. Likewise, the pleasure is all mine.
Yeah.
And
of course, I also hope, because I run this Python Academy, that's a little bit publicity, because I need some publicity.
Sure. We all need publicity, and I think it's important. Even Guido posted on his blog about a month ago of the need for marketing in the Python community. So.
Yeah. I think I do the marketing. Of course, I would like to start locally here.
Yes.
So, because I'm here, and it's easy for people to come here to my courses and have to travel far. The one thing, but also... Just start and go to the people. We have quite a few around here in Leipzig now. Amazon is coming here. Maybe you know. They're building a new distribution center here.
Who is this now?
Amazon. Amazon? The big...
Emerson. No, I wasn't aware of that.
There's a big book, the Amazon.com.
Yeah, it's a big corporation, certainly, yeah.
Yeah, it's a big one. And BMW is here, Porsche is here. They're all starting here. The German Post, DHL, is building the biggest whatever European hub of cargo, things like this. So that's really the big thing.
So business is going to be booming in the technical arena.
Yeah, no, Leipzig has always been, because it's in the middle of Germany, in the middle of Europe.
Right.
There's always all this traffic is going. So they have a big airport.
Well, and I know that Eastern Europe is booming. I spent on my... On my day job, I spent some time in the Slovak Republic recently, in Bratislava, and I think that was I forget the name of the towns, but close to Vienna. And I couldn't believe the amount of industry moving in and the dynamic economy.
Yeah, because now they have a pretty good one, because the working force is cheap and the taxes are pretty low, though they attract a lot of...
But technical education levels are very high.
Yeah, very high. Yeah. They have workforce. The prices are low, and the education is high, though this attracts a lot of people. And I think all the German companies move there for whatever
right.
they produce.
Yes.
So like in Germany, you don't want to do industry too much. You want to do something like really high-tech things.
Right.
Or they do this transportation thing. So those things you have to do locally.
Yes.
So things they do here. And in Leipzig, they have a big technical fairground out here. I live right here. And now they have this big, the biggest in Germany, big car fair. It's just the last day today. But they choose all the new car things. And they have a big, 2 weeks ago, they had a big book fair and things like this. So there are things going on here.
Quite dynamic.
Also, I hope they have a lot of technical people.
They need Python. Yeah.
They need Python. But they don't know yet. That's a problem.
Well, I predict that you're going to get the word out and that the Python Academy is going to be a smash success. And 20 years from now, you'll look back and everybody will know about the Python Academy in East Germany, I think. So that's my prediction.
Okay. I try to prediction every day with my model, so.
Okay. That's right, with your models.
I'm predicting 300 years in the future, though.
No kidding. with the groundwater.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, this was my last project. I did one of those open pit lakes, and they want to know how it's going to develop. And things.
Mm-hmm.
This lake is very filling very slowly. They'll be
right.
It for 300 years.
Mm-hmm.
So how the water is dribbling through the soil into the groundwater and flowing into the lake.
Yep.
And then I do this, but I know that modeling is, you have to calibrate a model before you can.
Right. Well, you could be like, I think the first science fiction book I read when I was a kid, it was by Isaac Asimov, the Foundation series, and it was there was a guy who was a socionomist. He could predict the future with mathematics. So maybe you will invent such a technology.
Yeah, we have. I think the only thing we can really predict is those rather simple processes in the environment.
Right.
In the subsurface, and we still have some uncertainty.
But he was predicting politics.
Of course, we have some big uncertainty. The climate is a big uncertainty. How much going to rain? How hot it is?
Yeah.
And then for this one, we use some results from done big climate modelers. There we run this big climate model all of the Earth, big model.
Right.
And then they use some techniques to localize this model to our region. And those things coming out there, we stuck in our model and see how this data is going to change. And they have some scenarios. They have a very dry scenario with little rain and a wet scenario and things like this. And then between this ranges probably to be like this. So.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Well, I think I'll bring the interview to a close, but who knows? Maybe we'll do this again sometime after your academy grows and moves in new directions. So,
yeah.
And I look forward to someday meeting you. So, thank you very much, and let's see how it goes.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
Yeah.
Bye bye. So there you have it, another information-packed episode. I do want to just make one comment. Since I recorded this last weekend, I went to a user group meeting up in another town where I was out of town doing business, and I met with another scientist who was doing incredibly interesting work with Python, also interfacing to old legacy Fortran code. In other words, Fortran code that was 30, 40 years old with, you know, millions of lines of code, and no one wanted to write it again or understand it, but they did all the interfacing with Python so that they could manipulate it, adapt it, and improve it with Python and control it with Python. So sounds like that's a very useful thing to do. So again, there you have it. That was an interview with Dr. Mike Mueller, the founder of the Python Academy in Leipzig, Germany. So for now, this is Ron Stevens with Python 411, computer programming for everybody.